This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
7:50 remaining, second period, 3-2 Winnipeg. Here comes Laine across the line, shoots, score! Patrick Laine with his second of the night. Winnipeg regains their 2-goal lead. It's 4-2 for the Jets, baby.
Paulie Edmonds with the call last night. It proves to be the game-winning goal. Patrick Laine, second of the game, made it 4-2. The Jets hold on for a 4-3 victory last night over the Detroit Red Wings. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. We also accept your comments via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If we like your text, if we like your tweet, we might even read it on air. That's just the kind of people that we are. Alongside my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host Drew Mandel, and as we mentioned, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezzy, good morning. Nice to see you on this Saturday morning. It's great that we got rid of the dead weight. That is Dave Minuk.
Yeah, where is he?
He's in Vegas.
Not bad.
Big roller. I think he's embezzling the Illegal Curve funds. What do you think?
And I think he's only there for 3 nights, too. And I was talking to him before he left. I don't think you could really go to Vegas if you're a single dude for more than 3 nights.
You can if you don't have any concern for your kidney or your liver well-being and your general health. Any longer than that, you're pushing the limits, probably.
I just think you get tired and you want to come home after that third night. Like, there's only so much partying and gambling that you can do. Like, yeah. I mean, you could obviously stay for 4 nights or 5 nights, but most of the people that I know that go down to Vegas seem to think that 3 nights is good.
Well, you know, I was talking to one of the other guys who's on the trip with him, and we were emailing back and forth briefly yesterday, and he said that he's sick in bed in Vegas and hasn't been able to have a drink, and he's just sitting in bed drinking tea while watching CNN.
So, that is not a place you want to be sick.
No. This is a bunch of old men, I think, on a trip to Vegas now. They're not young, spry folks like ourselves there.
That's torturous. Like, imagine being in a Vegas hotel room, yeah. Sick, watching everybody walking down the strip and having a great time, and you're just in there, you know,
lamenting your lot in life.
Drinking Pepto-Bismol or whatever you're doing.
A little bit of green tea, maybe. Yeah. So, yeah, it wouldn't be a fun way to spend a weekend. In any event, it was a fun way for the fans at Bell MTS Place last night to kick off their weekend as the Jets, with that 4-3 victory, as I mentioned, their first game since the terrific game on Tuesday night against the Nashville Predators. And you could sort of, I mean, the game on Tuesday was head and shoulders a better hockey than the game last night. You could tell the difference in quality of the Jets' opponent. You know, credit to the Red Wings for hanging tough, and every time the Jets got a 2-goal lead, the Red Wings battled back to make it a 1-goal game. They weren't able to get over the hump, and so the Jets, who didn't play their A game, but they probably didn't need their A game last night, they did enough to beat the Detroit Red Wings by that 4-3 margin.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew, about the game against Nashville. That was pretty demoralizing. You know, you give up those late goals, and you think you're at least going to get a point in that game. You could have easily won that game in regulation. I thought they played really well, and when you score that many goals, you expect to win. But let's be honest here. I mean, Detroit had no business being in that game after the first period.
Mm-hmm.
What were the shots? 19-5 Winnipeg in that second period. And, you know, Patrick Laine, to me, had to be the story of that game. The first goal that he scores, it's not just, you know, the shot that impressed me. If you remember, Trevor Daley has an opportunity to clear that puck.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit defenseman Trevor Daley has an opportunity, and Patrick Laine just gets a little bit of a stick on it, and it takes a little bit off of Trevor Daley's attempt to clear the puck off of the glass, and then it's all Laine's individual effort.
Yeah.
I mean, there are two Red Wings that are clearly back. Trevor Daley's a little bit out of the play, so really there were three Red Wings back, and that's just all dipsy-doodling on the part of Laine, and then obviously the shot was beautiful. But, I mean, we criticize Laine a lot for not producing 5-on-5. Both of his goals last night were at 5-on-5.
Yeah, and it's sort of amazing to think. That's what you, I think you see in that goal last night. I mean, most of his goals, or a lot of his goals, are on the come on the power play, you know, set up in the Ovechkin spot. That goal was an individual effort that just gives you a tantalizing glimpse of what Patrick Laine is going to be like as he continues to mature and he continues to learn more about the NHL. I mean, you know, this is a guy who's got 33 goals on the season, who's a kid. The sky is the limit, as we all know, but you saw it last night that this is a player who's understanding the nuances of the NHL game more and more, game by game. And, you know, Trevor Daley's no slouch. He's been a veteran in and around the league for a lot of years now. And what Laine was able to do to him and to do to his line mates, and the way he was able just to keep that puck on a string, on a stick, and then fire it past Jimmy Howard was, I mean, a world-class play by a world-class player.
And I know that Jim Toth and I, sitting up in the press box last night, were expecting Patrick Laine to complete the hat trick.
So was I, to be honest.
And I think most people at Bell MTS Place and people watching at home were expecting that as well. But, I mean, Laine has been fantastic here as of late for the Jets. And I think with Stastny now between Laine and Ehlers, you can see how much better that line has been. Because let's be honest here, and the top two lines were not great for the Jets last night. And I didn't think that Mark Scheifele or Blake Wheeler had a particularly strong game. I actually thought Kyle Connor was the best player on that line. He had some scoring chances. I'm not saying necessarily they had a horrible game.
Right.
I'm just saying they weren't really driving the bus offensively. It was really the Stastny-Ehlers-Laine line. And then you had Ben Sherratt and Dustin Byfuglien chipping in. So you got some offense from your defensemen. But I didn't think, you know, that the little Perreault-Rossovic line was that great either.
No, and we'll talk about that line coming up next segment because it's been an absence of production from that line as of late. You mentioned Dustin Byfuglien. Josh Morrissey and Byfuglien played together again. They were terrific. I mean, Morrissey with the great pass to Byfuglien as he comes around down the blue line and sneaks in sort of backdoor for the Jets' third goal of the game, pardon me. I mean, that was a great play by Byfuglien to sneak in, and a terrific pass by Josh Morrissey, who, again, he doesn't get a ton of offensive opportunities, just the nature of how the Jets defense is aligned and how their power play is aligned, but you can see the offensive game that Josh Morrissey has in a play like that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew, and you know, Morrissey deserved to be the second star in that game. And you know, Dustin Byfuglien, you know, now has, I believe, 16 points in 14 games since Jacob Trouba's been out of the lineup. So you talk about a player who is now taking advantage of the extra playing time. Now he's playing, you know, 24, 25, 26 minutes a game, similar to what he was playing last year. Because when Jacob Trouba is in the lineup, Buff's numbers are closer to, let's say, 21, 22 minutes. It depends a lot on how much power play time Buff gets. But the point is, Buff has been great. Josh Morrissey has been fantastic. And I think Joe Morrow quietly had a pretty decent game paired up with Ben Sherratt there. And Ben Sherratt, by the way, what a howitzer. Yeah. Gets his first goal of the year. He's been struggling to score goals this year. What a great shot. Great to see him get on the scoreboard. We know how hard of a shot he has. He won the hardest shot at the skills competition. I believe that was last year. So, I mean, overall, you know, an impressive game. And what I like probably the most about the Jets game is that even when the Red Wings made it a one-goal game, the Jets didn't change the way they were playing. They didn't change the way they were playing in their structure or the way they were using their speed. And really, I thought the score flattered Detroit. I thought it easily could have been 6-2 after two periods, Drew. And you think of that scoring chance that Joel Armia had. Andrew Kott made a really nice pass from behind the net, and Jimmy Howard made a big save. That's the one that stands out to me. But, you know, I was really surprised that that was a one-goal game in the third period because Detroit was really dominated in every aspect of the game for most of the game, with the exception of, what, maybe the first 10 minutes of the first.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what you would expect. The Jets are, I mean, this isn't Rockets, this isn't breaking news or anything. The Jets are a far better team than the Detroit Red Wings are. So, but the Red Wings, you know, they played tough all game. I thought when the Jets got a two-goal lead, either the first two-goal lead when they made it 3-1 or the second one when they made it 4-2, I thought Detroit was going to wilt. And to their credit, they didn't. They continued to push back against the Jets. And, you know, Connor Hellebuyck had to make, you know, really only one what I'll call crucial save in that third period as Detroit was pushing for the tie. That came, I think, was off Anthony Mantha with about 5 minutes to go in the game, thereabouts. You know,
Mantha had a really good game. He was very impressive to me.
Yeah, you know, Mantha's a good player. I mean, Mantha, Dylan Larkin, they're still going to be the future of the Red Wings, even if if the rest of the lineup, I would suggest, is in a bit of flux. I mean, Athanasiou, I thought, played a decent game. He had some good speed. He had, I think, a breakaway opportunity.
He did, yep.
For the Red Wings that Connor Hellebuyck came in was solid with. I thought it was a. I thought the Jets did enough to win. I thought the Red Wings played hard, and they get the clean 2 points, and that's really what you want from the Winnipeg Jets in last night's game before they head out on what's going to be the first three games aren't the most difficult, but the last three games of this road trip that's upcoming is going to be a very difficult 6-game road trip.
Well, the Hurricanes have won 2 games in a row, and they're still in a playoff race.
Yeah, they're still fighting.
So, I mean, you're not facing an opponent that isn't motivated to win here. So I agree with you, though, Drew. I mean, the Hurricanes game is not going to be the hardest game on the schedule, but as the road trip progresses, it's going to get harder and harder, and it culminates in that back-to-back against Nashville and Washington, right? Those are going to be the two hardest games, in my opinion, of that road trip. I don't think many people are going to disagree with that. So it goes back to what you said before, though. For me, what's most impressive is that you erase that tough loss against the Predators, and then you fight through some sloppy play early in the game, and the fact that you should have been up by more than 2 goals, certainly more than a goal in the third period, and you persevere here. And, you know, the Jets, what they're doing at home is really impressive when you look at their home record. They've only lost 7 games all year at home, right? And, you know, that's not something we've ever seen at Bell MTS Place. We've never seen a team this dominant at home. So, you know, very impressive all around. Sure, you don't necessarily like what you saw from the Jets' top two lines. But really, when Patrick Laine is playing the way he was playing and popping in 2 goals like that, I think I would expect the top line to be much better tomorrow against Carolina.
Well, that's why the addition of Paul Stastny as he is so important, because the Jets previous to Stastny coming on board, they had that sort of what I'll call a bit of a hole in that third line center spot. All due respect to Andrew Copp.
Well, that's not the third line. Let's be honest here. The Stastny Ehlers Line A line is the second line.
Absolutely.
I mean,
right.
Let's stop calling it the third line.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100% there. But my point is, without Stastny there, if it's Copp, Line A, and Ehlers, there's a hole in that line. And when on a night where Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor aren't at their peak and they're not terrific, let's say. And, the power play doesn't really do anything for the Winnipeg Jets last night. You would have been a lot more trouble scoring goals. Instead, you have that second line now with Stastny, Line A, and Ehlers that is, a dominant second line. And they proved it last night, especially when they were able to get the matchups. I mean, that goal, the one that I think that the Byfuglien goal, didn't the Jets have zone control for about 2 minutes on that play?
Yeah, they were in the wings zone for a long time there. And, that was just, an example of the Jets when they move their feet and they're able to put skilled players out there. And let's be honest, I mean, this Red Wings defense is not very good.
And they were caught in disarray because the Jets' power play had just ended, so they ended up with three defensemen on the ice. Cronwall came off the came out of the penalty box. So the Red Wings are a little befuddled on the play, but, I mean, it was Harlem Globetrotters-esque. You just don't see zone control like that very often.
You got the feeling that a goal was coming.
Yes.
When a team has the puck in the opposition zone for that long, and you knew that those players were absolutely gassed,
sure,
too. So it's a good point. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien saw that, and as you mentioned earlier, Josh Morrissey sauces him a beautiful pass. And as we talked about, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien, has been so good offensively, and we know that he was struggling to score goals and produce offensively earlier in the season. But, I mean, this is just a much better skating team, more skill on the ice, and it's just something that we haven't seen in previous years. This Detroit team just isn't the team that we're used to seeing, the team that makes the playoffs year after year. And let's be honest, they're rebuilding, but the Jets took advantage of that, and they didn't get discouraged by the fact that they weren't scoring more goals. And when you score 4 goals in a game, you think that wasn't a problem, but they had so many glorious scoring chances that I really thought they should have been up by more than 2 goals after 2 periods.
And Detroit opened the scoring, of course, and the Jets had a great response, as it only took them, what did it take them? 40 seconds after Detroit opened the scoring for Laine to tie the game, and then 26 seconds later, the Jets take the lead, and they don't relinquish that lead for the entirety of the game. That's sort of that's the response you want to see from a good hockey team when they go down to what I'm going to call a bit of a lesser opponent. They responded quickly and positively for at that point and for the remainder of the game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And it was almost like that Cronwall goal on the power play was like a wake-up call.
A little bit.
It was a late wake-up call. It's almost like, you know, your first wake-up call, you sleep in a little bit.
Yeah.
And then that was the second wake-up call. Okay, we're down a goal now. It's time to play.
It's time to wake up and let's take control of this game against a weaker opponent. As we mentioned, the Perreault-Little-Rostovic line. When we come back, I want to talk about that line. Five games now without a goal for anybody on that line. The last time they scored was Brian Little in that blowout defeat of the Florida Panthers. I want to talk about that line when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Myers wide on Barkov.
Look at the quick hands from Brian Little. Forehand, backhand, he taps it with the toe to settle it down and flips it up over Reimer on the back door. That was a beauty as well.
If you were trying to remember the last time Brian Little, Matthew Perreault, or Jack Roslovic scored for the Winnipeg Jets, it's been a while. You got to go back to the game, the Sunday night game against the Florida Panthers back in February as that line, what had been the Jets' second line, at least prior to the addition of Paul Stastny to the lineup, that line has now gone five games without scoring a goal. They got an assist last night. Brian Little got an assist. That's his second point in the last five games. Jack Roslovic has three assists in the last five games. Matthew Perreault, the big 0-4, the big donut in terms of the scoreboard in the last five games. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Edzie, so it's been a bit of a dry spell for the Roslovic Little Perreault line for the Winnipeg Jets. From your perspective, one, do the Jets need more from that line? I assume the answer to that is a pretty straightforward yes. And then two, why hasn't that line been able to succeed over the last five games? Those are three players who, at least Roslovic, I mean, he's in his rookie year in the NHL, but he's got a history of success at the AHL level. And Brian Little and Matthew Perreault, they're not accustomed to going five games with such minimal offensive output as you've seen as of late. So what's the matter with that line? Snake bit, something more profound, or just sort of the way the cookie crumbles sometimes?
Yeah, and it's clear, and you know, you make some good points there, Drew, and you know, this line has not been great, especially I would say over the last couple of games against Nashville and Detroit, and their ice time has been a little bit down. Of those three players, I thought Brian Little had the best game, and he was, I think, 65% in the faceoff circle. It seemed like he was winning almost every draw out there last night. But, you know, for me, Jack Roslovic, I don't think he has any shots the last couple of games. I don't think he's driving the net as much as he was in previous games. But I don't think that, you know, this line needs to be broken up or anything like that. I just don't think they've necessarily clicked as much as they were before. And let's be honest, we know how much speed and skill there is on this line. I mean, Jack Roslovic, I think we would both agree, Drew, that he's not going back to the Manitoba Moose of the American Hockey League.
Right.
But I think when you consider that all three of these players can go out there on the power play and they can produce at 5-on-5, you know, against the Nashville Predators, you know, I mentioned, I thought that maybe that was the one game where that line was probably the most invisible.
Mm-hmm. That line got badly out-coursed, if you look at the advanced stats. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know that Murat was talking about how poor that line's performance was. I think at a point in time in that game, Matthew Perreault was the leading player on that line, and he was only at around 25%.
Right, and that's because Nashville is a fast, skilled team just like the Jets. And especially, I think, when that line goes up against a bigger team like the Nashville Predators, that's why I think they struggle. So, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, have any concerns with this line right now. I have some concerns that they haven't been producing as of late, and especially against a team like the Detroit Red Wings. We mentioned it. After Nicholas Cronwall and after Mike Green, I mean, this isn't a very good defense. I mean, you've got, you know, Danny DeKeyser, Trevor Daly, Xavier Ouellette. I mean, this is, you know, a bottom five defense in the league as far as I'm concerned. So you'd think that little Roslovic and Perreault would like to do some more damage here, but you know, that's what it is for me, Drew. It's directing more pucks on net, and we know that this is a line that likes to create off of the transition, and they can create off of the cycle as well. Matthew Perreault and Jack Roslovic are fast players. They're tenacious players. They can get in on the forecheck. I just think they've been a little bit passive, you know, watching this team. I just don't think that they've done enough to generate offense. And that's not to say that they haven't done that before, because we've seen this line click. I just think the last, you know, let's call it 3, 4, 5 games, you know, they haven't been great. And, you know, even though, you know, Brian Little picked up a really nice assist yesterday against the Red Wings, you know, he has no goals in his last 5 games. And let's be honest, I mean, for a guy who's kind of averaged, what, 23, 25 goals over the last 5 years, he's stuck at 13 goals right now. And, you know, this hasn't been his greatest offensive season. So, you know, Matthew Perreault for me has really been the driver of that line. And at times, Jack Roslovic has been a driver for this line. So Brian Little for me probably is the one player that I'm the most concerned about, because now that Paul Stastny has arrived, we know how good the Jets are down the middle with Scheifele, Stastny, and when Adam Lowry comes back as the fourth line center, Brian Little is most likely going to be the third line center, I believe. So you definitely want to get him going as we get closer to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's got 2 goals in his last 13 games, which is not Brian Little-like numbers. It's been a down year for Brian Little.
Yep.
And it so happens the Jets have been playing so well that they you haven't really noticed that. And you haven't, it hasn't been a significant topic of conversation. But it's got to be a little bit of concern to the Jets management in that he's having a bit of a down year. They just signed him to a significant contract extension, which kicks in after this season. So that, you know, is this a blip? Is this the new reality for Brian Little? I suspect it's a blip.
I think it's a blip for the line. And I think when it comes around to the playoffs and you're able to put Scheifele's line out there and Stastny's line out there, and then you trot Brian Little's line out there, and then you get the better matchups.
Sure.
I think that line's going to come in very handy for Paul Maurice. You think of the HBK line for the Pittsburgh Penguins,
Carl Hagelin and Phil Kessel. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to be a very important line. That line has to be clicking. We know if you want to go far in the playoffs, you have to have 3 scoring lines, and then your fourth line has to be an effective checking line. Hopefully you chip in a little bit of offense. But I'm not too concerned here, big picture, Drew. I just think they haven't had, you know, their best games here as of late.
It's just a blip right now that they're working through. Does the line have a driver? Is that sort of maybe part of the problem, is that there's not an overwhelming driver to the line, and that, you know, Little and Perreault and, you know, are obviously the veterans of the line, and they're both very, you know, skilled players, and, you know, the Matthew Perreault, the reputation is that he makes his line mates better everywhere he plays in a lineup, up and down the lineup. Are they just looking to sort of maybe flesh out their roles a little bit clearer? Because it seems, barring something quite unforeseen, that, you know, Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler, Line A, Stastny, Ehlers are pretty locked in. So the expectation, at least my expectation, is that not much is going to change. That, you know, Perreault, Little, and Roslovic are going to be given the opportunity and given the time to work through whatever is currently bugging them offensively.
Yeah, for now, these lines are not changing. But, you know, if Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler start to struggle a little bit, maybe Perreault goes up there. I agree with you, though. I don't see those lines changing anytime soon. But you still have, what, 17, 18 games left in the season? I mean, I wouldn't lock those lines in for the rest of the regular season in the playoffs. The only thing that I would lock in is that Scheifele and Wheeler are going to stick together, and Laine and Ehlers are going to stick together. I mean, you know that Matt Hendricks is not going to become the second-line center. But, yes, I agree. For now, it looks like they're going to stick with Perreault, Little, and Roslovic. As far as the drivers of that line, I mean, I said earlier, I think Perreault and Roslovic, for the most part, have been the drivers of that line. line, and we know how fast and skilled those two players are.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brian Little is a facilitator. He can shoot the puck, but I mentioned, you know, Jack Roslovic, no shots in the last two games. You're not going to score any goals if you don't shoot the puck. I just don't think that they've been creating enough offensively. They haven't had enough zone time, and sure, they've been fine out there defensively, but, I mean, that line, especially when it goes up against bigger teams, I've noticed that they struggle a little bit, and Nashville's a bigger team. Even Dallas is a pretty big team.
He did have Jack Roslovic, you know, to his credit, he did have one very significant play that it didn't result in a shot on goal, because I think, if I recall correctly, he hit the crossbar on the shot, so it wouldn't count. But he did, you know, steal the puck at the Jets' blue line in that game versus Nashville, and on an individual effort brought it back into the Predator zone, where he unleashed a pretty good shot that beat Pekka-Rinne. Unfortunately, it caught iron. So, and to me, that was sort of the two-way play from Jack Roslovic that comes with being more comfortable in the NHL. So I agree with you, Ezzy, that right now they're in a bit of a dry spot, and the offense hasn't been there for this line. But long term, I suspect that they're going to figure it out, and that they're eventually going to, you know, break through and get the offensive side of their game back performing the way they want, because they've been pretty good defensively for the most part. And Brian Little, like you mentioned, Ezzy, very successful in the faceoff circle last night. He was the best Jet when it came to taking faceoffs.
Yeah,
last
it was
night.
65%. Little is a veteran, and he's been one of the Jets' most consistent players over the last 7 years. Same thing goes for Matthew Perreault, and he's obviously had some injury problems. Little has too, but you know, Jack Roslovic is a bit of a wild card in the sense that he's never been to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And there are a lot of players on the Jets. We're going to speak about this a lot as we get closer to the playoffs. You talk about Laine and Ehlers and Connor and Roslovic and Morrissey.
Scheifele's got 4 games of playoff experience.
Exactly. So there aren't a lot of Jets with playoff experience. But as far as I'm concerned, this is a line that Paul Maurice is going to depend on. And I think it's going to be a matchup problem when that's your third line. And you're going to have to decide who you want to put up against that line, because Jack Roslovic can create a lot of offense on his own with speed. So I don't think that this you know, this goalless drought is going to last very long. You know, but right now they have to figure out what's not working and try to make it better.
They have an opportunity tomorrow night to get off the schneid, as the Jets will be in Carolina to start their longest road trip of the season, a 6-game road trip through the Eastern Conference. And then that ends, of course, with that game in Nashville against the Jets' Central Division rival. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Scott Billick of NHL.com. He's the Jets' correspondent. Talk about last night's game. Look ahead to the road trip. Much more to come on your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to TSN and Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. You're listening to the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg are with you in studio. Dave Manuk away. He's on a yoga retreat this week, if I'm not mistaken. You can follow us on Twitter at O'Legal Curve, Facebook.com/O'Legal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is O'LegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Scott Billick. Scott is the Winnipeg Jets correspondent for NHL.com. You can also read his work at Pro Hockey Talk. Scott, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How's it going?
Doing very well, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. A little tired.
A little tired?
Bed, so, yeah, that's all good.
That's a little late night after the Jets game last night?
Yeah, sorry, Scott. We know that you wanted to sleep in today, but...
It's my only one day off this month, Ezzy. Come on.
It's the your one day off this month. No rest for the wicked, my God, man.
No rest for the wicked. No, I'm just bugging you guys.
Well, we appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning anyways there, Scott. Obviously brought you on to talk a little bit about the Jets. A solid 4-3 victory last night. Not an A-plus effort from the home team, but enough of an effort to get by the Detroit Red Wings. You know, Patrick Laine, obviously the difference maker last night for the Jets with his 2 goals, but I want to talk about Josh Morrissey, or ask you about Josh Morrissey, Scott. Sort of the offensive side of the game, we don't necessarily see it all that often because he doesn't get the power play time that some of, you know, that Dustin Byfuglien does, or gets the, you know, the publicity that Dustin Byfuglien does. But you saw it on 2 great stretch passes last night, the one to Byfuglien that he scored on, and then Laine's goal, the 4th goal of the game-winning goal. Just, you know, Josh Morrissey and the evolution of his game, and even more of the offensive upside that he has going for him.
Yeah, you know, Josh Morrissey is obviously, you know, come into this team and turned into obviously a very solid defenseman. And then, you know, because he's such a good defenseman, and when he was playing with Trouba and how well that pairing was going, you tend to maybe forget what he can do offensively with his stick. And you saw it last night. I mean, the pass that he fed to Bufflin, you know, it went through one defender for sure, kind of nutmegged them. And then I don't know if it passed another one. I haven't seen the replay again, but, you know, just an incredible pass. The vision on that pass was, you know, pretty uncanny for him to be able to just kind of, and he was having a good game last night. You know, obviously the stretch pass too that set up the Laine goal, and it just the way that he's been able to kind of, you know, pick his spots, and maybe that's, you know, the most important thing with Josh Morrissey is, you know, he's never one to really take a whole lot of risks out there. So when he was kind of able to feel the opportunity to produce offensively last night and kind of get up on the play, and you know, I remember seeing him around the net. He was trying to, you know, trying to just create last night, and he just sensed that he had, you know, the wherewithal to know that he could do that. He didn't need to maybe be where he, you know, needed to be defensively, and he could move up into the play. And you know, I think that Josh Morrissey is he plays beyond his years. You know, he thinks the game beyond his years. You know, he's one of the smartest players, you know, probably in the league in terms of just how he, you know, sees the ice and plays the game. And it's kind of not that surprising to see how, you know, well he's doing. And then when he jumps up into the play, you know, that you can kind of be assured if you're a Jets fan that he's not taking a huge risk to you know, on the defensive side to try and create something offensively.
Scotty, with Buff's goal last night, he's up to 3 goals and 16 points in 14 games since Trouba left the lineup with an injury. Is Buff a player who's just embracing the increased role?
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about that, you know, amongst the media types, you know, when we were eating dinner or whatever before the game. And I think, you know, the more that Buff plays, the better he feels about his game. And the more Buff plays, the more engaged he is mentally. And when Buff's engaged mentally, we all know, you know, what he can do on the physical side of the game. But I think there's also that offensive side to the game that, you know, comes out of him as well. And, you know, I don't know what it is, you know, whether it's, you know, he just feels more important when he's getting, you know, a bunch of minutes or that sort of thing. You know, there was a time earlier this year where the minutes were spread out and, you know, Bufflin wasn't looked at as that at number one, you know, defenseman or even that number two when Josh and Jacob were healthy playing. But I think, you know, when Buff has had to step up, he's kind of embraced that, you know, like you said, kind of wholeheartedly, and has really kind of, you know, turned around a season where he wasn't scoring a lot. You know, it took him, you know, I forget how many games it was. I want to say 28, but I could be wrong on that. But, you know, it took him quite a few games to kind of get that first goal this season. Then he was out with an injury, and you know, now that, you know, he's back healthy and just being able to kind of, you know, play his own game and that's kind of, you know, doing kind of, you know, having a role offensively. And, you know, you saw him last night. I can't remember how many times. It must have been 3 or 4 where he tried that one-handed wraparound on his goalie. And so I just think, you know, when Buff's feeling it, when Buff's playing more minutes, that's when you know that he is, you know, he's engaged, and he's just, you know, I think it's just part of, like you said, is he's just, you know, that increased role right now is really kind of helping his game, and a byproduct of that is obviously helping the Jets.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Jets for NHL.com. Scott, I don't know if you were listening in the previous segment, but we were talking about the Little Roslovic Perot line that they've been struggling on the offensive side of things over the last, you know, 5 games. They're without a goal. Brian Little, you know, he's been having a bit of a down season, I think it's safe to say, with only 13 goals thus far this year. How concerned would you be from a Jets perspective that Brian Little has been, you know, hasn't been able to produce the goal scoring numbers and the offensive totals that we typically are used to seeing from him?
Right. And not only was I listening, guys, I was doing a little bit of research for you just to kind of look at
that. Attaboy, Scotty.
But, you know, I mean, just doing my part here. But, no, you know, Brian Little, you know, I'll talk about him first. Obviously, you know, Brian's been asked to do a different role this year, I think, than maybe in the past, where, you know, a little more offensive. And Brian's always been a player that's a little bit streaky. You know, he'll go stretches with, you know, quite a few goals, you know, and then he'll, you know, kind of have a stretch where he doesn't score. But, the, you know, this season, if we're just going to isolate this season, you know, he started on a line, or he's played on a line with Ehlers and Laine, and, you know, at that point, you know, Brian Little turns into, from, you know, maybe an offensive center and trying to do that to trying to play a more offensive game and kind of make up for maybe some of the inefficiencies on defense from the two young Scandinavians there. So, you know, and then he's now working on a line with another young guy in Jack Rossovic, and obviously playing with Matthew Perreault. And, you know, I'm not worried about Brian Little as much as maybe some might be. The last five games haven't been great for them, for that line. You know, if you look at their, you know, you want to look at their Corsi, it's sub 40%. If you want to look for high danger chances, they've only got 2-4 and 8 against in the last five games. It hasn't been a great stretch for them, but, you know, I imagine that's part of what happens on a team. And when you have a team that has three very solid scoring lines, you know, one team can have a bit of a slump, and the other two can kind of, you know, take on that. If you want to call them the second or third line, well, Laine's line last night obviously, you know, produced some offense for the team when maybe the first two lines or both lines 1 and 3 weren't scoring. So, it may be a slump right now. I don't think it's something that'll stay like that. And whether or not Maurice decides to juggle those lines, I guess depends on what happens when Adam Lowry comes back and how they're going to kind of fill those roles and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think we'll see something on this road trip if anything's going to happen, because, you know, they have quite a few games coming up that are, you know, tough games, and, you know, they're going to have to break out of that funk to make sure that they're successful on this road trip.
Scott, I think we all expect Connor Hellebuck to get the start tomorrow night versus the Carolina Hurricanes. When you look ahead to this six-game road trip that's coming up, and you don't have a back-to-back until the end of the road trip when the Jets play the Capitals and the Predators on the road, are you expecting Hellebuck to get 5 of 6 starts on this road trip?
Maybe 4 of 6. I mean, you know, so it depends on how it works with Steve Mason. If he's good to go and he takes the road trip after he plays for the Moose tonight and then possibly tomorrow, you know, maybe he doesn't play. Obviously, he's not going to play Sunday. Probably won't play Tuesday, but you might see him in that Thursday game. And then you'd probably want to, and it depends if you want to play Hellebuck back-to-back on the Monday and Tuesday in Washington and Nashville, respectively. But perhaps Steve gets a game on the Monday against Washington, and then they play Hellebuck fresh on the night on Tuesday when they play the Predators. You know, 5 of 6 is, you know, it's not out of the question, of course. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of talk recently about, you know, fatigue with Connor Hellebuck, and he says it's not that been that much of an issue. You know, goalies are never going to say they're tired. They want to play as many games as they can. But I think you want a fresh Connor Hellebuck. So depending on how you play him, if you play him on the Saturday on the noon game, and he doesn't play till Tuesday, you know, he gets a good solid rest, as the Jets are going to be, you know, tired to go up against on the second half of a back-to-back against the Nashville Predators, and which could be, you know, again, another big game depending how the week plays out. You know, the Jets could be fighting again to, you know, take over first or to get into a tie for first in the division. So, you know, I think Steve might play 4 of 6 or 2 of 6 on this trip if healthy. If things don't maybe go well for him this weekend, or there's any sort of setback, and Hutchinson's on the trip, then, you know, maybe 5 of 6 is out of the question.
Scott Billick, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Jets for NHL.com. To your point about the goaltending, Steve, the revenge of Steve Mason next Saturday afternoon going back to Philly certainly seems like it would make a lot of sense to me, but of course we'll see how that plays out over the course of the next, you know, week to see if he's healthy after the stint, the conditioning stint that starts tonight with the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's obviously possible too. I know when they played Philly here earlier in the season, Steve didn't get the start. And so I think it just depends on, you know, kind of how Maurice has it set up. He's always been talking about, he looks ahead, and this is where he slots goalies in for each game. And so, you know, perhaps, you know, Steve does play on Saturday, but then, you know, where are you going to play him? Are you going to play Hellebuck on the back-to-back on both nights? And what happens if, you know, things in Washington don't go well, and you know, you're going to go right back to him. So yeah, I guess it just depends. And you know, Maurice hasn't really kind of divulged how he sees he's going to use him. And part of that might be too because they don't really know what Steve Mason is going to do after this weekend and see, you know, kind of how he feels. But you know, it's always interesting to see where they're going to use him. And we got to remember that, you know, Steve Mason hasn't played a lot of games this year. And especially in this last, I think we counted three in the last, you know, several, you know, 30 or 40 games where he hasn't played a lot. You know, two concussions have obviously hindered that for him. And so, yeah, it'll be an interesting road trip to see what the Jets do. It's a tough one. You know, and I think it starts on Sunday. That game is going to be a tough game. Carolina woke up this morning in a playoff spot, and they're probably going to want to keep it. And that Rangers game might be, could be one of those what they call trap games. And there's a couple other teams that are, four other teams that are, well in the playoff hunt and a couple close to the top of their division there. So it should be an interesting trip.
Scotty, last question for you, then you can go back to bed. What have you thought of Joe Morrow's first two games as a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
You know, there was some talk on after his first game that he had a bad game. And you know, I think maybe if you just watch the game, at a superficial level, I guess, I suppose he didn't have the greatest game. I thought he played better last night. But even the first game, he was only on the ice for one of the goals against, just one of them. You know, there were six against in that Nashville game. And, you know, he comes in, probably not expecting to play, that morning. And then, when Toby goes down, he comes into lineup and he's forced to play. And, there's a lot of things that go into that. And so if you look at the mental side of the game, it may not have been his best game, but I thought he tightened up a little bit more last night. I didn't really notice him much last night, which is probably a good thing as a defenseman. You don't want to be seen unless, you're like Ben Sherratt, who's drilling one in from the point there. So, I think Joe Morrow had a better game last night. Maybe the game on Tuesday wasn't what he would have wanted, but, I don't think it was the worst game that he played either. So,
Scott Bill covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. He's a good friend of ours and a good friend of the program. Scotty, always appreciate your time, buddy. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Scott. When we come back, we talk about the Jets Hurricanes. They're in action tomorrow night, the first game of the 6-game road trip. We preview that contest up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.
Down that right side and tried to tuck it back. Wheeler's got it out in front. Goes! And the tear continues for Nikolaj Ehlers. Jets take the lead.
That was from back in October, the last time the Jets and Hurricanes met this season. It was a 2-1 Winnipeg Jets victory on the strength of that Nikolaj Ehlers game-winning goal that you just heard. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. You are pointing at me, Ezra Ginsberg.
I forgot to tell you this. Please. I was at the game on Tuesday against Nashville as a fan,
yes.
And there was someone that already had a Paul Stastny jersey, and I wanted to ask the guy if he got it at Keener Jerseys, but I was shocked because basically he had less than 24 hours to get Stastny on the back of that jersey.
That's some impressive dedication,
yeah.
The kind of which you can only find through our friends at Keener Jerseys.
Must have been Keener.
It had to be Keener.
Who else can do that?
Nobody else can do that as far as I know. Anyways, check him out, KeenerJerseys.com, for more information.
I was just impressed.
Yeah.
Like that someone had already done that.
That's a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
It's definitely a quick turnaround.
I wasn't even mad.
No, you weren't even mad. Just impressed. It was a quick turnaround. So the Winnipeg Jets start their 6-game road trip tomorrow night in Carolina. The Carolina Hurricanes, which goes to show you just how bad the Eastern Conference has been, that play, the race for the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
How is Carolina in a playoff spot right now? Before these last two wins, they have lost six in a row.
And they've only won 29 of their 65 games this season, which is way below .500 winning percentage. They've just taken 11 games into overtime. So the Carolina Hurricanes currently reside in a playoff spot. Whether or not it's smoke and mirrors is really sort of irrelevant. You got to watch out for the Florida Panthers there, as they still have three games in hand on the Hurricanes and are only a point behind the Hurricanes. So the Panthers, who've won five in a row and are 8-2 in their last 10.
The only reason the Panthers and the Hurricanes are where they are in the standings, I'm not saying that they haven't earned where they are.
Yeah.
It's because the Islanders and the Blue Jackets have completely messed the bed.
The Islanders, especially, they are one of the worst teams. They're actually, they've got fewer points. I got the stat right over here, I think, somewhere, if I can find it. The New York Islanders are 14-21-5 since December 1st. That's a total of 33 points, which puts them 27th overall in the NHL. So like the Blue Jackets, who had a good start to the season and have been terrible since then, the Islanders are the same way. Decent start to the year, been terrible since then, and it's really just a race to the finish.
The Rangers have won their last two games. Now they're only 1 point behind the Islanders.
The Rangers have more points than the Islanders over the last 3 months, and the Rangers sold off their entire team and anything that wasn't buckled down. In any event, we're getting ahead of ourselves. The Carolina Hurricanes are the Jets' opponent on Sunday evening.
I still think Columbus makes the playoffs, by the way.
Well, we have got about another month or so where we can break down the playoff race in detail. So the Hurricanes, 27-25-11 on the season. 29-25-11 now that they've won their last two games. They have a negative goal differential of negative 21. They don't score a ton. They're in the bottom of the league in that category. They give up too many goals. They're in the bottom part of the league in that category as well. This is a game that Jets should be able to win, given that they're a better team than the Carolina Hurricanes. And if you're the Jets, you want to start this six-game road trip off with a solid performance, because the first three games of this road trip are the easier of the three, as you have Carolina, the Rangers, and the Devils, who are all below the Jets. And then the last three games of this road trip are where it gets more difficult, where you have the Flyers, who are playing good hockey and eke 1-1 in the last 10, second overall in the Metropolitan Division. And then you have the back-to-back against the Capitals and the Predators. So the Jets have to make hay with their first three games starting Sunday evening in Carolina.
Yeah, well, the Devils are playing pretty well, too.
I would
put them in that category as well. They're in a playoff spot as well right now,
yes,
right?
Yes, but so, the Jets are, I mean, the Jets have 11 more points than the New Jersey Devils do in the standings.
Sure, I'm not saying that the Jets aren't a better team, Drew. I'm just saying that you're still facing a playoff team in the Devils and the Hurricanes, right?
Absolutely, right now
So absolutely, right now, I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, we've talked about the Hurricanes throughout the season here. The strength of this team is their defense. The goaltending has been a big letdown for the Hurricanes this year. Cam Ward is their number one goaltender right now. Yeah. He's going to get the start tomorrow night. It's not going to be Scott Darling. He's had all sorts of trouble this year keeping the puck out of his net. And, you know, when I look at that defense, I mean, they can move the puck. Noah Hanifin, Justin Falk, Jacob Slavin's a defenseman I really like, Brett Pesce. I mean, this is a very mobile defense. That's the strength of this team. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, their lack of goal scoring at times throughout the year. Teuvo Teravainen is absolutely on fire right now. Mm-hmm. And I've mentioned to you before, Drew, I think Sebastian Aho, even though he's only 20 years old, is the best player on this team, and he's having a great year. And, you know, Jeff Skinner, you know, has started to pick it up a little bit here later in the year, but this isn't a very physical team, and it's not a team that's going to intimidate you offensively. So really, as far as I'm concerned, if you're able to shut down that line of Sebastian Aho, Elias Lindholm, and Teuvo Teravainen, that's the Hurricanes' most dangerous line. And, you know, Jordan Staal, I think, is having a pretty decent year, as always. You expect, you know, Jordan Staal, you know, to lead your team as far as, you know, up the middle. But, you know, it's just a team that
let me just interrupt you quickly, as we want to send our condolences out to Jordan Staal and his family, of course.
Absolutely.
They lost their newborn baby recently, and that's
that's horrible.
That's a horrible situation, and the hockey world has rallied behind Jordan Staal and his family. And so we want to echo our condolences as well, because that's just a horrendous situation that can't even you know, begin to wrap your brain around.
Yeah, and speaking of the Stahl family, I think more people should be talking about the season Eric Stahl is having.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's top 10 in the league in goals right now. What is he at, 31, 32? He's having a great year.
He is having a great year for the Minnesota Wild. You're absolutely right about that. But, you know, to your point, you're right. The Hurricanes, I mean, you sort of, you know, they're offensive capabilities is, you know, loaded on the top of their lineup. Jeff Skinner's having a pretty down year for the Hurricanes.
He's been better as of late, though.
As of late, he's been better, but you even heard his name bandied about briefly.
Still got 20 goals.
I know, but you heard his name, you know, bandied about maybe as a potential on the trade block. I didn't really believe it because, I mean, you know, it's hard to think of Jeff Skinner in a different jersey than the Carolina Hurricanes jersey. You know, it'll be a test for the Winnipeg Jets. The Hurricanes are playing better hockey as of late, and they are in a playoff spot, despite, you know, their record might be a little bit of smoke and mirrors given the number of games that they've taken to overtime. That being said, you know, they want to continue to be in a playoff spot, and the Jets, you know, certainly can't overlook them because on any given Sunday, as the case may be with tomorrow night's game, a weaker opponent can defeat a better opponent, and the Jets need to be sharp tomorrow night.
Right, and the thing that stands out to me when I watch the Hurricanes, and I have to admit, I haven't watched the Hurricanes a lot this year, They're not an easy team to play against. I talked about that defense, but you've got some speed and some skill on the wings. Players like Justin Williams, we mentioned Sebastian Aho, Tara Vinen, and when you go up and down the lineup, Victor Rask is a player I really like. They've had him on the fourth line as of late. He had his breakout year last year. He's been struggling. You'd expect to see him either on the first line or the second line, but It's not an easy team to play against. So, you know, I wouldn't expect to go into Carolina and absolutely steamroll the Hurricanes, but you just don't have a dominant line or two dominant lines like teams like the Predators or the Lightning or other teams have, right?
It's kind of spread out. They're not an offensive juggernaut.
Exactly. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, Jeff Skinner might be having a bit of a down year. He actually hasn't scored in the last five games, even though he's got 20 on the year. It's a team that's a bit top heavy. And when you're talking about the top, that top isn't that dangerous, right? So, You know, the Jets are the favorite in this game, but, you know, it's not going to be easy because as we talked about, you know, the Hurricanes are a scrappy bunch.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster John Forsland to get more on the Jets' opponent tomorrow evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell and Ezra Ginsberger with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours. His name is John Forsland. He is the play-by-play broadcaster of the Carolina Hurricanes. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, John. Always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning. Yo, John.
Well, good one.
Go ahead.
No, that's okay.
Okay. You know, first time we've seen the Hurricanes since early October. That's when they made their lone visit to Winnipeg this season. And Sort of hard to believe that after having lost six games in a row, the Hurricanes win two games in a row, and all of a sudden, they are back into a playoff spot, or they're into a playoff spot, holding down the final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference as things currently stand. You know, this is a Hurricanes team that's been scratching and clawing all season long, but I guess it's an accomplishment, despite only having 29 wins on the year, that they finally have broken through to being back into a playoff spot.
Well, I guess wild is the operative word, right? So, you know, these teams are searching for two wild card spots, and New Jersey, you know, kind of stretched out their situation with a little bit of a run recently, but now they've lost two in a row. And so the gap between the first wild card and the pack of teams that are looking at the line is only 5 points. So you never know if the Devils are going to come back to the pack. And then you have all these other teams around the line. And the most impressive team right now are the Florida Panthers, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So they're a team that's, I believe, won 12 of their last 15 games and are playing some incredible hockey. They have games in hand on the rest of the teams, so you have to keep an eye on that club. But for the Hurricanes, Columbus, the Islanders, you know, all of those other teams, they have a lot of things that are really good about their rosters. They have a lot of issues. And because of that, you're seeing you know, variance in play. If the Hurricanes can get to a consistent level in terms of their identity, guys, and I think that's been the issue all season. You know, under Bill Peters in the last 3 years, the one thing you can say about the Hurricanes is their systematic approach has been very good. Their positional play has been sound, and their defensive game has always been in place. Now, in the last couple of years, you could look at goaltending and say, okay, maybe they need an upgrade there, and I think they tried to address that last offseason. But this season, that defensive game hasn't really been there. It has, and when it has, boy, they've been able to beat some of the best teams in the league. And when it hasn't, they look like a team that won't make the playoffs. But over the last two nights, the game in Philadelphia Thursday night and the game last night against New Jersey, that identity reappeared. And they suppressed a ton of chances and shots, and we'll see where it goes against the Jets. Obviously, that's a huge challenge, but they feel that if they can get onto that, it's going to lead to some success. And it's going to be really, the trick will be whoever's the most consistent of this group of teams, you know, will make the playoffs.
John, over these last two victories against New Jersey and Philadelphia, Justin Williams has 3 goals and 4 points. Just how important is a veteran like Justin Williams here as the Hurricanes make their final push to the playoffs?
Well, he's vital. And, you know, he's been a tremendous guy to bring back. So when they looked at the team in the offseason, Ron Francis figured, okay, the available free agents, you know, what kind of player can come back and be a different voice in the room and bring a little credibility attached to it. But the uniqueness of this, as you guys know, is the fact that you're bringing back Justin Williams from the best years of the Hurricanes. So as a Stanley Cup winner in 06, and then he goes on to L.A. and has an amazing pedigree and run there, did a pretty good job in Washington, but he wanted to come back and live in this area and be part of this young team and try to help it a little bit. And I think at times, to be fair, I think he's been frustrated the way the season has gone. But the one thing about Justin is he's a straight shooter. So he basically has been able to set the tone in a positive way, and also when the team needs a little bit of a kick. He's forthright in his comments. He leads by example. And I don't think it's any surprise the last two games when, you know, you're winless in six, you need a game that is surrounded by leadership, that Justin Williams will be one of those guys to be at the forefront of it all. And I'm sure you guys know this and have followed what's been going on here, but Jordan Staal and his family have gone through a real trying time of late. He lost his infant daughter on Friday. And because of that, he had to step out of the lineup for 3 games. And the news came out and the specifics of what happened came out finally. And he just came back to the team on Thursday night. And, you know, I think that had a part of the inspiration here for the Hurricanes over the last two games, I think a huge part of it. And I also think that when you look at the situation involving Williams, it's Justin Williams who has been the leader through all of that. So, yeah, he was a big part of the last two games, but he's been a huge inspiration and kind of a mentor for some of the younger guys here to get them pointed in the right direction.
John Forslund is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Carolina Hurricanes, the Jets, and the Hurricanes tomorrow evening from Raleigh, North Carolina. John, last year it was Bill Peters sort of ripping on Eddie Lack after his performance, and then about a month ago it was Bill Peters ripping on almost the entire team, demanding changes after a 3-1 loss to the San Jose Sharks. You know, how do those really critical comments, how have they gone over in the Hurricanes dressing room? Is there anybody that's, you know, in that dressing room that's maybe wearing thin of Bill Peters and his propensity to wear his emotions on a sleeve?
You know, I think a coach, in all my years of observing the game and doing this and while watching coaches, you know, go down this road, they can only get away with it a few times. It's not something you can continue to go at players with. It's not a direction, certainly in today's era. I think the players are different. I think when I watch Paul, and I remember when we first talked about Paul going to Winnipeg way back when he got the job, I think Paul Maurice, for me, has done a remarkable job adapting, you know, his coaching style to whatever today's player is. So you cannot coach as long as he has throughout the years in the National Hockey League without changing. So he's looking at a far different athlete in the younger players that he has in his roster today than he did back in 1996 when he took over the Hartford Whalers. For Bill, he's kind of in the same mix, although he hasn't been an NHL coach, not even close to as long as Paul Maurice. But in the time that he's been with the Hurricanes, he's only done this a couple of times. That is, go down the negative road. Is it wearing thin? I mean, I think that's basically a player's opinion that they probably keep to themselves. I do know this, that there was a reaction to it, to the good, and then there was, again, another inconsistency that crept back in. So I say that it's kind of been a mixed bag. I don't know if that message has a lot to do with what might be happening right now or not. I think the last two nights were a byproduct of the six-game winless stretch, a recognition by the room that no trades were made, and this is the group that's going to have to do it if they do make the playoffs. And then the stall situation, I think, added some inspiration into this. So I think Bill's used that box. He's checked it off. I don't think he can go to it again. And I think at the end of the season, they're going to take a look at this and see, you know, where they're at and what they have. I think Bill's a very good coach. I think he's done an excellent job in terms of a system and his positional awareness of where guys need to be on the ice and all of that. But there comes a time where the managers will look at it and say, okay, is it registering with this group of players? I mean, that's in every market with every team. So we'll see where it is at the end of the year.
John, Cam Ward has got the last two starts for the Hurricanes, both victories, obviously, and we expect Cam Ward to get the start tomorrow night versus the Jets. How good of a feel-good story has Ward been this year? Because everyone was expecting Scott Darling to get the majority of the starts this year.
Yeah, I think it's been an amazing story. For me, it's not one that surprises me. I might be in the minority on this, especially in this market. I think fans have become frustrated with Cam over the years, and really that's about the team, not as much on him. He's had moments where he hasn't been where he was early in his career. His durability's been questioned. He's had some injury concerns and so on. But I knew in the offseason a couple of things. I mean, they did take a tremendous leap of faith with Scott Darling as a number two, a four-year contract. Okay, you're going to now be the number one goalie, and you're going to lead this team where it needs to go. This was the first season the Carolina Hurricanes had any preseason expectation attached to it. There are some people, you know, that predicted the Hurricanes would qualify for the playoffs. That hasn't happened in a long time. There are others that thought they'd be right where they are, kind of a bubble team. Some people may have thought, no, they have no chance to make the playoffs. But really, the majority of people that you talked to prior to the season thought the Canes would certainly be in the mix and make it. And Scott Darling had to be a reason. Well, Scott Darling has really had a tough time adjusting to being a number one goalie. It has to be a mental thing. It's a little bit physical when you look at the way he's played, some of his angles, techniques, and so on. I think he's struggled a little bit, but I think his confidence has been shaken. And because of that, Ward has assumed the net again. And he has been outstanding. I mean, when this season is over, you look at MVPs, Cam Ward's going to be in the conversation for a team MVP. There's no question about it. I felt in the summer that there'd be a struggle for Darling. I thought that I didn't see this coming. I didn't see a save percentage around 88%, a situation where I don't think he's going to be given any important starts here down the stretch. I didn't see that. I thought there'd be a few months of getting used to it and getting used to a new place and a new role. And then I thought, you know, Cam Ward's a perfect guy to have as a subordinate to get him in there. And because of his experience and his franchise attachment and who he is. I mean, when you're a cup winner, and this is still a goalie, I don't care how many years ago it is, that has won game sevens in the playoffs on the road. You know what? You don't lose the mental capacity to be tough and know what it takes to win when the chips are against you. And I think he put the chip right on his shoulder. I don't think he was happy with the role at the start of the season or how it was handled in the offseason, and he's shown it. So good for him. I think Cam Ward has just proven once again that he's a great National Hockey League goalie. He has over 300 wins, and for this franchise, he's been a terrific franchise player.
John, a couple more quick questions for you. We appreciate you joining us. John Forslund of the Carolina Hurricanes broadcast team is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hurricanes 26th overall, I guess tied for 25th overall in terms of goals for in the league this season. How do the Hurricanes find more offense? Is this and we've been talking about this for the last couple of years, is this going to require a trade of one of their very impressive young defensemen to acquire the offense necessary to be in the top 15 of the NHL in terms of goals for?
I think so. I absolutely do. I think it's a summer situation, probably in and around the draft. I think they're going to have to look at that when this season is over, and I think they really need a number one center. They have some guys here. Jordan Staal is a very effective 2-3, an elite defensive center, but he's not going to put the points on the board needed, nor be that kind of dynamic guy that can help wingers like Sebastian Aho and Table Terrifying, some of the skill they have on the flanks, Jeff Skinner. I mean, you're going to need a strong number one center presence, and you see it with the Jets and how they've been able to get to where they go. You know, you look at, and I love Mark Scheifele. I mean, I know he's had his injury concerns this season, but I mean, he has developed into a guy that can be that type of player, you know, down the middle, and then you kind of fill in the blanks behind a real number one guy. You have to have that in the National Hockey League. The great teams have two of those guys, and then they have a very strong three and the four guy that performs in the role that you expect. So when you look at the Hurricanes with, you know, Jordan Staal, Victor Rask, who's had a subpar season, he's playing the wing right now. It's just been one of those years where last year he was inconsistent offensively, and they thought he could kind of get back to where they expect him to be as a two. That hasn't happened. And then Derek Ryan is arguably a four center in the National Hockey League, maybe a depth guy in your organization, but he's been asked to be a 2-3 at times. And then they're playing a rookie right now, Lucas Walmark, who's a prospect, had a good year in the American Hockey League, but, you know, he's a project. So that's the void. And for them to become a better team, because they're always around that level in terms of scoring, you know, you're going to have a guy as a number one presence. Like we see, Nashville make the jump when they traded Seth Jones to get Ryan Johansson. They still had to go out and get Kyle Turris to become a premier team as they are right now. So it's never changed in hockey, right? It's down the middle. You have to have strong center ice play. And if you have a real number one center, that's a hard thing to get unless you have the opportunity to draft that guy. And for the Hurricanes, they do have Martin Natchez, who they drafted last year. He's an 18, 19-year-old kid who played in the World Juniors and was very good for the Czech Republic. But you cannot go into next season and say, oh, here's part of the answer for us and bank everything on that player. He's a good, young, dynamic player at an outstanding training camp, and maybe he makes the roster next year. But for me, that's the need. How do you get there? Through the prospects you have in your stable, the draft choices you're ready to relinquish now, and probably a real good defenseman off your roster. That's how that's going to happen. That's for me. And I think Ron Francis, who's been patient and calculated and has acquired, you know, depth in terms of prospects and draft choices, needs to act on that. There's no doubt that for the Hurricanes to make a leap offensively.
John Forslund is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. John, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. My pleasure.
Take care, John. Thanks again.
Okay.
When we come back, we look ahead to the playoffs and discuss if the Jets have a desired or a preferable first-round playoff opponent. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Screen in front allows Dumba to just unleash one up top. And they've won two games in a row against the division, against two teams that are historically tough on them. The Wild are starting to show the right signs here.
That will do it. Final score, 5-3. The Jets pick up a win over Dallas.
This Winnipeg Jet team, I mean, they're doing it to everybody right now. They just keep winning.
Audio from a Wild victory over the Winnipeg Jets and the Jets' most recent victory over the Dallas Stars. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Ezzy, the Jets have a 6-point lead over the Minnesota Wild for second in the Central Division. They are 6 points behind the Nashville Predators for top spot in the Central Division, primarily because the Predators staged comeback victories over the Oilers, and the Canucks the last two nights.
What happened to the Wild last night?
The Wild...
they hate playing in Denver.
They lost 7-1 in Colorado last night, having lost on Thursday night in Arizona. So the Wild, who had been playing some very good hockey, who were nipping at the heels of the Winnipeg Jets, lose two games in a row, one very winnable game to the Coyotes. Maybe you understand the loss to the Avalanche, but maybe a 7-1 loss is probably not as understandable as a close loss, let's say, in Denver.
Colorado's not out of it.
No, but not by a long shot. Only a point behind Anaheim and a game in hand, only 2 points behind the Dallas Stars. As we sit here on March 3rd, though, Mr. Ginsburg, it seems likely that the Jets are going to finish second in the Central Division. Sure, they can catch up to the Nashville Predators.
Well, Nashville doesn't lose.
Right. They don't seem to lose. They've won seven games in a row.
Yeah.
So the Predators, conceivably, they could go into a slide and the Jets could, you know, not even go on a hot streak, but, you know, keep playing decent hockey. And
they don't have any more games in hand, though. It seemed like for 3 months the Predators had games in hand on the Jets. They're both at 64 games now.
Yeah, that's right. So for conversation's sake, let's say that the Jets are going to finish second in the Central Division.
Sure.
Between the Wild and...
they're not going to play the Predators.
They're not going to play the Predators in the first round. But between the Minnesota Wild, the Dallas Stars, who are only 2 points behind the Wild with a game in hand, and you can even throw the Colorado Avalanche in there if you want for conversation's sake, do the Jets have a preferred first-round opponent of those three teams in your mind?
I don't think the Jets themselves have a preferred first-round opponent, but I'll tell you who I wouldn't want to play in that first round, and it's the Minnesota Wild. If you're talking about those three teams, I mean, for me, Minnesota is clearly the best defensive team out of those three teams. Now, when you're talking about offensively, I mean, Nathan MacKinnon is out of his mind right now.
Yeah, he's...
what did he have, 5 points last night?
Something like that. He's certainly in the conversation for the Hart Trophy that we'll discuss
later on. Well, forget about
that.
I mean, he's just one of the most dangerous scorers in the league right now.
Yeah, he looks like the Nathan MacKinnon that... you expected when he was drafted first overall.
Yeah, he scored, 63-64 points in his rookie year.
Yeah, and then the whole Avalanche organization went through that tailspin, and now, now that
everybody was bad last year.
Right, and now
they had 48 points last year.
Now that they're out of that tailspin, MacKinnon looks like the dominant player that was drafted first overall.
Yeah, and Mikko Rantanen looks really good, and Gabe Landeskog looks really good. We've talked about it. I mean, it's a different team without Matt Duchene there. So for me, Drew, you just don't want to face Minnesota. And we know how good Devan Dubnyk is in net, but it's that defense. I mean, led by Ryan Suter. I mean, that's a formidable group of defensemen there in Minnesota when you talk about Jonas Brodin and you talk about Matt Dumba's having a good year. I think Matt Dumba is having a very underrated year. Jared Spurgeon.
You heard him in that audio scoring that goal against the Jets from back in, I think that was January when the Jets and the Wild played.
Yeah, and we talked about it last hour. I mean, Eric Staal is having an unbelievable year, and you expected Eric Staal to maybe tail off.
Career resurgence.
He's on pace for 40 goals right now.
Yeah, since he came to Minnesota from Carolina, he's been the dominant Eric Staal that you saw in his prime in Carolina.
Right, and up the middle, you got Eric Staal, you got Mikko Koivu, Matt Cullen, Joel Eriksson-Ek has played some center there.
A strong veteran lineup who've been to the playoffs year in and year out with... not tremendous playoff success by any stretch of the imagination in Minnesota. We know they lost in the first round,
but a very good team. And to me, you know, that's something that Dallas and Colorado are lacking right now. Sure, you know, those two teams have been better defensively, and Dallas getting Mark Methot back. But we've seen how the Jets have feasted on the Stars this year.
14 goals for the Jets
right.
against the Dallas Stars in three games, six goals against.
Right, and I think John Klingberg is absolutely in the Norris conversation right now. I mean, he's top three, I believe, in points right now. He might even be number one. I haven't checked recently, but he's up there. But when you're talking about, you know, Esa Lindell, you're talking about Steven Johns, Greg Patterin, that group of defensemen doesn't give me a lot of confidence when compared to the Minnesota Wild or some of the better teams. Certainly the Nashville Predators, I still think, have the best top six in the entire league.
No question about that. The Predators are look like a juggernaut.
Right, and we know that defense wins championships.
Well,
and Ben Bishop's had a pretty good year, Drew, but he's also struggled at times. I definitely would take Connor Hellebuck over Ben Bishop, and I would take Connor Hellebuck over Semyon Varlamov.
So
but when you're talking about Devan Dubnyk, I think they're pretty equal. That's a wash.
Well, Vezina, you know, candidate has been, you know, we know how good he's been for the Minnesota Wild since coming to the Wild organization after bouncing bouncing around for the for those many years.
I think if you can avoid playing Minnesota in the first round, that's what you want to do. And sure, the Jets will tell you, I mean, it doesn't matter. As long as we make the playoffs, you know, we will play whoever we're playing, right? But if you're talking about those three teams, at least in my opinion, that's just my opinion, I think the Minnesota Wild are a much better team than either Dallas or Colorado.
Well, the Jets are 3-1 on the season against the Minnesota Wild, 14 goals for the Jets, 10 goals against. And keep in mind, that includes that demolishing that the Jets put on the Wild earlier in the year. I think it was a 7-1 home victory for the Jets over the Minnesota Wild. So that's sort of inflating the numbers to some degree, because every time the Jets and the Wild play, when it's not a one-goal game, you're surprised. Meanwhile, the Jets have had the number of the Dallas Stars. We saw it, was that last Saturday, with that five-goal second period against the Dallas Stars. The Jets have had great success. Patrick Laine has been absolutely tremendous against the Dallas Stars. So it's an interesting decision. I agree with you. I think the Jets would rather not face the Minnesota Wild because they are the most well-rounded of all the other teams in the Central Division. But I guess we're about a month away. We'll know who the Jets are going to meet in the first round of the playoffs. Of course, you know,
it'd be a great series, though.
Oh, I mean, the Jets and the Wild will just be, I mean, tremendous. The closest rival that the Jets have, you know, in division, it would be a tremendous series between the Jets and the Wild.
And I'm not saying, by the way, that I don't think the Jets could beat them, because I think the Jets can beat them. I'm just saying, back to your question,
it's a harder matchup.
Yeah, and when you're talking about Dallas and Colorado, I mean, let's be honest, Dallas has one of the best top lines in the league with Sagan, Ben, and Radulov. But I think after that, I think you'd agree they're top heavy. And John Klingberg, you know, he plays 23 to 25 minutes a night. He's one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. But when you're talking about Minnesota, I think they're one of the more underrated teams right now going into the playoffs.
We'll know more in the next month as we wind down the regular season. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Keith Gave. Keith is a reporter in Detroit. He covered the heyday of the Detroit Red Wings when they were led by the Russian Five. We all know those great players that led the Red Wings to such Stanley Cup success. He's got a new book. It's called The Russian Five, a story of espionage, defection, bribery, and courage. Coming up next, we talk to Keith about his new book. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.